welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Hi JP, welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast. How are you?
Really good, man. It's good to be with you.
First thing to say is thank you so much for agreeing to do this, especially short notice. I'm very grateful for your time. I know we're a bit pushed for time, but I'm sure we can get a good conversation the next just under an hour or so, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, looking forward to it, man.
Brilliant. Well, I know a bit about you because I know you from some of the podcasts that you've had out there and obviously the books and things you put together and stuff. But for those people that don't know you, aren't familiar about you, a bit of background to yourself and your journey, what is you currently doing, if that's okay?
Yeah, a coach, you know, just like all the listeners to this podcast are most likely, an average coach at best, nothing exceptional. I don't have any amazing awards or medals, but I've always cared about making an impact in the lives of my athletes, and actually got my start in coaching in Limerick, Ireland, about 2007, 2008. I had played basketball before that at the University of South Carolina, so like a Division I level. Wasn't a very good player, was a walk-on, but got to play at a high level for a little while, and then got cut my teeth in coaching in Ireland. And like I said, you know, I wanted to make a difference. I got on there just to kind of give back to the game. Then I fell in love with the sport. I felt again, you know, and the idea of teaching the sport and pushing the team, and got, you know, really got all into coaching. I actually dropped out of a law degree that I was, you know, finishing up, and went and got a PE, an English teaching degree, because I was so passionate about working with young people. Fast forward, you know, 10 years, and, you know, I have a bit of a crisis in my coaching. I'm coaching the States and high school level there. I, you know, coached all over the place there professionally and in Ireland, Lithuania, but I'm coaching the States, the high school there. And, you know, changes started to happen. I mean, I think they were gradually slow, but, you know, you start to get more caught up in the wins and losses. You take those moments a lot harder. You know, the culture starts to really change in sports around that time. American culture is obviously different too when it comes to sports, especially basketball in America versus basketball in Ireland per se. But yeah, I really struggled personally. And it was just the weight of coaching was, you know, exhausting. There wasn't fulfilling. The relationship struggled. My culture struggled, and kind of hit rock bottom as a coach. So tried everything and eventually reached out to help, which is not my traditional way, is to reach out for help. And I went and got a coach, and the coach worked with me and just made an incredible change in my coaching, working with somebody else and in my own life. And since then, since 2017, I've been sharing that growth and my journey with other coaches through my blog, through my podcast, through my books, and also by coaching other coaches.
When you say you got yourself a coach, do you mean like a mentor, someone to kind of support you in your process?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, mentor, coach, some of it's semantics, but, and we've talked about being mentors to coaches, but the things that I do now when I coach other coaches is, I mean, some of these guys have been coaching and they're Hall of Fame coaches, and I've gotten to coach, you know, they're old, well older than me, you know, 20, 30 years older than me. And sometimes, you know, when I'm a mentor, I'm like the expert, and in many ways I know a lot of things around culture. I've studied it. I've spent a lot of time, and I do, you know, can try to be an expert around culture and understanding it. But a lot of times I'm not telling people what to do. I'm just actually helping them to first off be convicted in what they know, you know, their values, why they coach, you know, what they set out to do that season. So some of it's just about helping them to be convicted, but I'm also helping them to troubleshoot their issues. You know, because I think it's really about helping coaches to kind of step outside the situation, outside the emotion of the situation, and to kind of figure things out through some conflict that might come up in their team culture. But also we're kind of mentoring and coaching and helping to implement what we would say are some common tools and methods that we've seen across a lot of great teams and organizations in the world, not just in sports. What are some of these common tools and methods to build the culture? So we help to coach and lead and guide coaches through that implementation.
I mean, first of all, to say, look, well done, because I think a lot of coaches, whether they're professional or amateur, they have wobbles on their journey, you know, because it's not easy. And, you know, you're constantly being challenged yourself. And for those of us that want to kind of progress and stretch ourselves, then part of that is taking yourself out of your comfort zone and being stretched. And when we hit those wobbles, I don't think we always do turn for help. Sometimes we just try and fix it internally, which isn't always the best way of going about things. So reaching out and getting someone to mentor, coach us and support us, I think, well done, because I think that in itself could be a podcast episode about the power of reaching out and seeking help sometimes and guidance at the right time. Is that what triggered your interest in this whole kind of team culture world, or did you have a passion for that before your own kind of experience?
You know, it's interesting. Growing up, I've been a part of, as a player, some, you know, one or two good, you know, team cultures, and great experience pushed me, felt like I grew through the experience and was able to play at my best, or you know, and what I think that's what team does is you feel connected. It's a memorable thing. It helps you to grow. It helps you to also be at peace to, you know, the culture itself doesn't provide a lot of interference into your, you know, your performance. Right. So I've been that, but I was part of probably a lot of negative team cultures, you know, or more toxic ones as well too. So, you know, I always wanted to create a great team culture for my team. And I'd read a lot of books around leadership and culture, but the reality is I don't think I ever left with those, you know, after reading those books, like a clear idea of actually how to do it. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, this is what it is. These are some leadership principles. But like, how do I live by those principles? How do I instill those within my team? And so I've always was fascinated by it, but it wasn't until I actually started working with a coach and they started helping me to implement some of these strategies, tools, work on my skills as a coach. Because sometimes the culture and leadership, it comes down as a skill, and you have to train those skills. You need coaching on those skills. You need to reflect on your conversations with the player or reflect on how practice went, and then have someone give you some feedback on, well, that, you know, I can see how you felt it went that way, but let's look at it from the perspective of the players, your team, and walk you through that. So that's where I really started to feel like I actually started to make some headway and started to land on some practical ways to develop my skills as a leader, practical ways to, you know, move the culture forward.
And your main sport is basketball, right? That's the main sport you play, practicing coach. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it was up, you know, but then in 2017, now I feel like, you know, basketball is probably about half the coaches I get to work with. I've been in ice rink now. I never got to even see an ice hockey game. And I spend, you know, a lot of time in Canada working with ice hockey and, yeah, you know, work with rugby and American football, soccer, tennis, volleyball. I mean, it's, you know, track and field. It's a wide range of sports now.
Well, I mean, that's the point, I guess, about culture. It doesn't really matter what sport it is, does it? Or even what organization it is. It's the, you know, it's transferable, and it's in all of us and all the things that we do. But I do think with basketball, and I don't know this, I mean, I know the sport, obviously, and we play a little bit at high school here, but we don't, and unless we're very good, we don't go much beyond that in England. But it has a very kind of camaraderie kind of spirit about it, basketball. You feel like, you know, all the teams have a culture and they're quite tight. And I guess, you know, are there some sports where it just is a bit more magnified than others have you seen, or is it literally just universal to the same
question
degree?
Yeah, I wonder how much, you know, that perception really just comes from the fact that basketball is a very American sport, and
right, yeah, maybe,
you know, and so
and all the shows are on TV recently, right, that we've seen that have kind of ramped it up, so maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, so I think there maybe there's a little bit of the American enthusiasm that you we comes and feeds into that perception. I think the interesting about basketball is that you know, it is a very popular sport in the sense that it's well attended in a lot of, you know, places like America. So there's big crowds, but it's also very, the fans are very close to players, and you can, yeah, see the player expressions. You can see the coach. The coach in some ways is not even metaphorically, but literally is on a stage, you know, in some of the college or pro arenas. Now the court is elevated above, you know, the first row of stands that are sitting actually below, and they look, you know, so it's, you know, the coach is on there, and it's, there's a lot of attention on the coach, where, you know, I think Americans find it funny when we like look and like, oh, the and rugby, or you see the players walking into the stands, you know, like it's like, it's a very funny way of doing it. So, I think in American sports in general too, the coach is so highlighted, and it's like, oh, well, what's the coach doing over there? You know? And I think that obviously changes the perception of what good coaching is, you know?
Now with the coach's hat on, how would you describe your kind of approach to coaching, or if you like your philosophy around coaching? What kind of coach are you?
That's a great question. I think the term that we like to use of what we're trying to aspire towards, as far as not just a style, but it's a way of being, which is a transformational leadership approach, servant leadership, transformational leadership. And when you know, or a mentor coach is another way you could phrase it, you know, a coach that's looking to guide the players and guide the team towards their individual goals and their team goals. That wants to connect the team around a shared why, you know, why are we here? What are we looking to achieve? What would be possible if we all came together? So that's the transformational coach, the mentor coach, is really about guiding the team to reach their potential and to create an exceptional experience and to become better athletes and hopefully better people, you know? And I know that might sound a little bit cliche or cheesy to a lot of individuals, but I mean, that's not just an American concept here, you know, being the American here. It's like, that's, you know, New Zealand All Blacks, better people make better All Blacks, right? We want players with character. We want a team with character. We want a coach and have character ourselves. So, when we talk about the style or way of being, I say way of being because all this, you know, leadership of transformational leadership, it starts with how we see other people, how we see our players. Do we see them as people with, you know, challenges, obstacles, ambitions, desires that are as legitimate as our own? Or do we see them as obstacles and vehicles, or even irrelevant obstacles to success, because the player's not bought in, because the player has a bad attitude, because they're not playing well? Do we see them as vehicles, like, oh, they're really talented, they can help us win, you know? Or irrelevant as just, well, he's just no much better than the water boy, you know, he's just a practice dummy, I could get somebody else tomorrow, he should be grateful to be here, you know? Like, these are some of the things that we hear coaches say, or we internally, you know, as our self-talk as coaches, you know. And so, you know, really transformational leadership starts in the heart and the way that we see other people, or the way we see our players. And outside of that, you know, then there is certain common ways of coaching and leading that, you know, are more mentorish than just, you know, dictatorish, you know.
We're going to uncover some of this stuff in more detail, but the topic of the podcast is really around how we develop a great team culture, which I know is something you've been passionate about, and a lot of the work you do covers that. But I guess if we go back to the kind of beginning of this, what are we talking about in your terms when you say we talk about a team culture? What does it mean? Because I think people could interpret that in different ways potentially. So when you're talking about team culture, what's your view on that, and what does it include?
Yeah, we like to look at two main things. We like to measure culture by the strength of the relationships, the connection, how connected are people? And that, you know, how are they connected around a common goal? You know, are they connected? You know, do they feel safe? Is there trust? That's the connection piece, you know? So I would literally look at safety, trust, and that shared purpose. That's, you know, that's how Daniel Coyle talks about it in the book, The Culture Code, right? The other thing on my y-axis when I was measuring the culture would be the standards, the behaviors. How do you actually do things? Not the things that you say on the wall, like love, toughness, you know, whatever, but like, how do you actually do things? How do you do things when the leader, the coach isn't there? How do you do things when stuff goes bad? You know, like you go down 3 goals, you know, in the first half, you know, how do you respond as a team on the pitch there? So how do you do things day in and day out? How do you show up? So those would be the two things, is the standards, the behaviors, how do you do things? And also the relationships, the connections. Those would be the ways that I measure it. Now, what's also driving that, you know, at the core, is it just the leader? Is it just the head coach? Is it the head coach and the captain? Well, great teams to really go and to go far as a team culture, you need to have strong relationships. You need to have high standards. But to drive that and to go really far with that, you need a more of a player-led approach, you know, and it can't be just you. I was just talking with Sean Fitzpatrick, you know, former All-Black captain, and he said the best All-Black teams that he captained, and, you know, I think he was for over 50 test matches. I said the best teams that he was captain for of the All-Blacks, it wasn't just him. There was a group of them that really drove the culture. And the coach was able to move from being more of that, you know, authoritarian dictator, and he was much more able to be this guy that's just, hey, guiding the team.
There's so much in there, isn't there? There's so much to it, like that is can be tricky to pick apart, but that's what we're going to try and do. JP, I know you've written a book recently. I think it's called, is it The Culture System? Is the latest book?
That's it. Yep.
And I've had a privilege of having a look through it, which I've read a few books that cover this topic, some really good ones. But I found your one fascinating because not only was it really interesting, but also it's kind of looked at different ways of looking at things and processes as well. So if it's okay, without giving everything away from the book, I'd like us to maybe just to cover some of the key chapters, if you like, or the areas that you covered, I think, in key chapters, just to really help me understand it more, to be perfectly honest, but also maybe to help listeners understand, you know, what the book covers and some tips there maybe they can take out and put in the teams that they help support. So the first bit you speak about there is around transformational leadership, which you mentioned already in the podcast. But can you tell us a bit more about that, what it is, how it looks, and then like how even a regular kind of grassroots volunteer coach might be able to use some of those tools and techniques to look at themselves and think, okay, am I a transformational leader in the way I'm coaching the team that I'm supporting?
Yeah, and I think in the first part of the book, you're really just trying to talk about why do I coach? What does success look like for me? Like essentially, what's the vision for my team? You know, having a clear picture of that, maybe having a few ways that you might measure that. It's really deciding, I'm like, what's really important? Who are you as an individual? You know, like your values. It's knowing those things. So those are three big components of a philosophy, but no, that's a really hard thing to do. It's not something you just sit down, you know, over a morning coffee and figure out, you know? And so really what I really am really trying to encourage coaches, if you want to be a transformational leader, it's just find, and any grassroots coach can do this, is just find a few disciplines in your life, whether that's reading every day, reading once a week, you know, it's reading six books a year or reading a book a week, you know, like it's just, at the end of the day, it's just finding things that you can do in your life to reflect on your coaching and to continuously fill your head with things that will stretch you, challenge you, and help you move towards those things that you say are really important, that mission, that thing that you want to, you know, the impact that you want to have on your players, things that will help you to lead from your values more and more. So I think the great coaches out there, the great leaders, they're very introspective. They take time. They have these disciplines in their life to grow. They don't spend their days just scrolling Twitter, you know, for the latest drill. They're deep in, you know, learning about new things, new ways to approach things, better ways of doing things. So it's that growth mindset is at the core of it. I would say that's kind of really, you know, it's really, I encourage coaches, you may not have a mission statement, you may not have a vision statement, you may not have core values, but at least identify a couple things that you can do to start just slowly, you know, growing as a coach.
And to do that, and from your experience and obviously reading around the subject, would you suggest or recommend that as coaches, we focus on the process that we're trying to achieve rather than maybe the outcomes? Because you said at the beginning about, you know, it can become less fun doing this job when you just have to get measured by results only, because you can only influence that to a limited amount, however good you may be. Is it about looking at a process and believing and supporting and going with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that one of the things I encourage coaches is to try to find measures of success. You know, society measures success on achievement, ability, and acknowledgement, right? How many games have you won? Did you win the championship? Ability, you know, oh, you're very skilled at coaching. You're very knowledgeable of the sport, you know, and for a player, you know, what's his ability? And then, you know, ability, achievement, and acknowledgement. Oh, you know, that guy's got lots of followers. He's got a lot of respect, you know, like people talk about him, right? That's what society tells is success. And I try to think about, hey, what's your vision for your team? And what are your new measures of success? And it comes down to the experience. Think about first is the experience. What will they remember? Is a big, you know, component of that. And secondly, who are they becoming? You know, who are they becoming through that process? And those are two really, really important measures that I think we should have clear in our head is, you know, what are they going to remember? Who are they becoming? And what's it going to feel like would be my third thing. Like every day, how do you want it to feel like for you and for your players? And those are the things I would focus around a little bit in our process is, yeah, obviously you can be like, are we, our process is we're driven, we're, you know, we show up, we work hard and those things, but also what does it feel like? What will they remember and who are they becoming?
What are some of the, I guess, the trip ups or the bumps on this? I mean, I guess every coach will be listening thinking, I want to be a transformational coach, or maybe I am, I'm doing these right things. What are the things that get in the way of this sometimes? I mean, I'm thinking about myself again now. I'm thinking maybe outside pressure is one, you know, how in inverted commas pressure. What I mean, I coach under 10s and under 14s, you know, what pressure is there really, you know? But actually you can get a bit carried away with some of the league tables or some of the nonsense that comes with that. Is outside pressure one of those things that might deter you from staying to be a transformational leader, or are there other things that might get in the way as well?
Well, outside pressure is definitely one, but I would say most of us as coaches, you know, even coaches I work with at high levels where their job is dependent upon an outcome, still would say, honestly, the most pressure I have comes from myself. You know, it's my own desire to achieve. And so this is why it's so important to, A, first off, have a bit of a philosophy, have some of this vision, you know, that's in place, these measures of success, to share that with your players, to share that in a grassroots level with the parents, with the club that you coach with. Hey, this is what's really important to me, you know, to be really clear about that. And that way people are more likely to hold you to it, you know, honestly. And then to find some people in your life, you know, maybe you're fortunate to have, you know, to be able to hire a mentor or a coach. But for other people, that's probably not, you know, realistic. So it's about finding a few other coaches to go on this journey with you, to have dialogues, to grab coffee with once a week or once a month, and just, you know, make sure you have people around you that can, hey, how are we doing on these things? You know, and even just using some Google Forms surveys with your players. I would look to measure it. If you say you want them to have the best experience they've ever had, or, you know, you want that your vision is a place that they, you know, everyone wants to be a part of and nobody ever wants to leave your team. Okay. We'll measure that, you know, send out, ask the players, ask the parents, what do they perceive? You know, how do they feel about it? What's it feel like to play here? Ask them, what's it feel like to play for me? Those questions can be really powerful.
And I think the good thing about sharing maybe your vision and your plans and what you kind of try and aspire to be is if you share it, you hold yourself to it, don't you, as well? Because you put it in the public domain, you kind of then you reflect more yourself and think, how am I doing it? If you keep it to yourself and it's a secret, then you can easily kind of maybe have the odd week where you don't follow it so tightly. But if it's out there and you share it with parents, players and everything, you're more likely to follow through on it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's honestly one of the most powerful experiences that I had as a coach. Was when I started making these changes, as I sat down my team, and I said, guys, honestly, this culture stunk the last few years. It hasn't been a lot of fun to play here. It hasn't been a lot of fun to coach here. I said, that's, you know, I want to change that. But I know that the change is got to start with one person in particular, and that's me. And these are some things I'm working to control my temper. I'm working to stop lashing out at referees. I'm working to hold you guys accountable consistently in a way that's respectful. You know, here's things I'm working on, you know, and I apologize to certain players that I had, you know, might've mistreated. And I asked my players, I said, hey, when you see me going off the track, I want you to pull me aside and say, hey coach, you know, like, and just, you can give me feedback. And I remember moments in that season where I might be really getting, you know, coming out of my chair and starting to lay into the referee and
the old habits.
Yeah. And a player might just grab me and say, yeah, come on, coach, you got this, you know, or, you know, we'd call a timeout and I'd want to like lay into my team because their effort stunk. And they, you know, a player might see me or a captain might just be like, come on, coach. All right. Just stay calm, you know? You know, what's so cool is like, I was talking to an athletic director at a big high school in the States yesterday. He was just telling me, and I share some of that story in my book, and he read that and he went in there. He got all 20 something of his coaches. He's out in San Diego and he got all 20 of his coaches. And he said, guys, where do I struggle as a leader? He just asked them that question and they gave him some feedback. And he's like, and he knew what they're probably were going to say. And then he said, that's my goal this year for you all as coaches, as your leader, I'm going to be working on those things. And I want you to give me feedback on it. So that transparency around what we aspire to, our goals, our vision, but also like where we're trying to grow, that is powerful.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. So the next bit, and you touched on this stuff, I'm sure, already by talking about the first part around transformational leadership, but, and this is a big question. How do you establish a team culture? Like how can we do this? You know, again, you know, we're not all necessarily professionals doing this for a living. Some of the coaches listen to this be working with their players 1 hour a week and they've got full-time jobs and stuff like that. But what are some of the ways in which we can really help our teams have you know, a team culture that we'd like to nurture and create?
Yeah, there's loads of ways. I mean, one thing is just think about the first day. The first day a kid walks onto the field and asking, if you got a new player that comes in there, ask one of the more veteran players, hey, you know, Johnny's joined the team today. What can you do to make it like great for him? I'm going to partner you up with him. You know, just partner them up. Or so you got a whole new team together. That first day, being intentional, not just to focus on the drills that you want to do or anything like that, but like, let's carve out 10 minutes to play a game, ask some questions, and guys share about themselves. We like to do speed dating activities and just, or we like to do other question games, just getting people talking. So just that first day, are we actually getting people to start to connect with each other and to learn about each other, you know, just, and I know it's like, you probably got 60 minutes for practice, but it's like just taking that for 5 to 10 minutes, the start of a practice or a training to allow that is huge. Secondly, I would say is in the one-on-one conversations you have with players. And I know like at the youth level, it could be just 5 minutes before or after a training. At the older levels, we have what we call player development plans, where coaches sit down and have 15-minute coaching conversations with it, where we're helping the player identify their goals, share where they think they're at. We share where they're at, you know, identify some commitments to kind of close the gap from where they are to where they want to go, right? So a little bit more formal, but just whatever it is you're having consistent one-on-ones with players where you're sharing that you're invested in them as a player, but also as them as a person. So you're asking questions about their family and stuff like that. So connecting with them as a person would be another big thing. So that those would be some initial big things when it comes to establishing the culture from the relationship side. When it comes to the team standard side, I'll give you two simple ways to do this. One is to have 3 non-negotiables as a coach. Just think about what's most important for you to be successful as a coach. Just well, I need players to be on time. I need them to listen, and complaining really irritates me. So I like, those are my 3 non-negotiables. And so I communicate those and I support those and I enforce those through the entire year. Those are my non-negotiables. One of the best ways to communicate those non-negotiables is just to ask your team, guys, you know, 5-10 minute activity after practice, break them into groups. What do we need from coach this year for us to be our best? And they all talk, write some things down. And then they share and you put them on the board and they vote on the top 3. And then you say, okay, those are your expectations of me. Those are your non-negotiables for coach. Here's my non-negotiables for you. And you share those. So simple little activity you can do after trainings. We call that the mutual expectations conversation. The other thing is just, yeah, if you have time, you have budget and you're maybe a little bit, you know, it's a little bit more appropriate where you're at. You can have the team over for pizza party or just get some pizza afterwards and just say, hey guys, you can kind of identify a, you know, a goal or, you know, some sort of vision, like what do we want this experience to be like, or what success look like for us this year? Or if we really came together, what could we achieve together? You know, just some sort of North Star, and then say, okay, what are the 3 most, 4 or 5 most important things that we need to do as a group to achieve that, you know? And so you kind of set out like a North Star and some team standards that you can then come back to and refer to every practice, every game, and kind of hold them to. So, you know, you're establishing the relationships, but you're also establishing the standards really early on.
And how important is it that you involve the players in that process? I mean, obviously you've asked there for them to give you feedback about what you could do as your maybe 3 non-negotiables, but generally speaking, do you find that these things tend to work better the more involved the players are in the process, the more you can include them in the decision-making?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why we don't just encourage coaches to dictate rules anymore. You know, I went in there, I once gave my players, oh gosh, I still remember the day, like it was in Limerick, and I came in and we were struggling. Our play wasn't great. The attitudes weren't great. So I came in and said, J.P. Nurbin's 10 commandments. I literally said, these are my 10 rules. You know, they don't remember any of them. They just, you know, like they didn't respond well to that. Like, that doesn't work, you know? So having them a part of the process is good, you know, if you can, you know, because what you really want to do is you want to connect these standards to the outcomes they want, the experience they want, you know, like, and so we try to encourage the coaches, when you have standards, they need to understand the three benefits of meeting the standards. First off, if you meet the standard, it's good for you, the individual. You're going to be a better player. You're going to have a better experience. It's also good for the team, second thing. And thirdly, it's good oftentimes for the relationship, your relationship with your coach, right? Like if you don't listen, you're not on time, you know, we're going to struggle. We're not going to get along, right? And every kid wants their coach to like them, right? So you need to tell them the three most important things for you to like them, you know, like I think that's only fair.
Is culture and environment the same thing?
That's a great question. Never been asked that. When I think about that, you know, I think oftentimes the environment is more of like a technical term of everything, even outside of the team. The environment of Liverpool, you know, like could probably be a little bit different than the team culture. Like the team culture comes back to how they're connected, how they do things, but the environment of what it is like to play at Liverpool also involves everything that comes with playing for that club. Right.
Yeah.
So I that's how I would see it, you know, is culture, you know, you have cultures obviously within cultures, right. You know, like you could be, you know, your team culture and the club culture, and your club culture could be high performance, all about winning championships, but, or you could have like, hey, we're just a club to have fun and keep kids active and healthy. Right. So that's the environment, you know, is more of the culture within the culture is how I would define environment.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. Well, I think one thing that, you know, coaches often do is embrace these things and we give it a go and we start off with best intentions and we do the things we spoke about so far, JP, where we, you know, we've agreed on negotiables, we're getting players involved and we start off all well and good. But I guess the trick here is about maintaining it and kind of nurturing that team culture and supporting it. Is there any kind of tips and advice and guidance around how we keep this going on for the longer term?
Yeah, the first thing is to drop our stinking expectations for perfection. You know, like I think as coaches, we're like, man, we had that meeting. The kids don't do what they said they're going to do. You know, it's like, yeah. And I remember there's this date called January 1st and everyone says they're going to do all these things. And then how much do these adults do what they say they're going to do? This is where coaching and this is where leadership really comes in. It's really easy to do the team activities. It's really easy to actually do the initial one-on-ones. But when the rubber meets the road, you know, when the challenges come, when the busyness of the season comes, have we created space to stay intentional off the pitch with our team? So you got to go ahead and pre-schedule some team meetings a month in or some reviews or some, you know, leadership type meetings to kind of come back to it is one thing. The second thing is, comes back to those disciplines, right? We mentioned earlier as a leader, Are you working on your skills as a coach? So much of supporting the standards is about us now that we're in the training and we're not playing hard. Now, after we get killed by four nil, you know, in a match, how am I intentional in those moments? How, when the team's not working hard, a player has an attitude issue, how do I respond? Am I just going back to the old way? Because if you are, then all the stuff that's established doesn't really matter. If you're just yelling and screaming, or quite the opposite, you're just ignoring the unacceptable behaviors, doing nothing about it, or just, you know, throwing out praise, you know, just trying to encourage, you know, which encouragement's good. You need to stay positive, and positivity is very important when you're down 4-0. But there's also truth. There's also helping to be effective in our feedback. There's also being effective in saying, hey, remember that standard we set, right? Or you're not meeting it, right? Okay, what's something you can do to elevate your play? So it's about coaching the behaviors now. That's the, you know, it's about helping work through the relationship conflicts, to get asking great questions, to get players to reflect on their behavior, how it's affecting other people. That's a big component of it for sure.
And I guess setting those milestones kind of ahead and those opportunities to review and reflect in the future is a good way to kind of keep benchmarking yourself to make sure, okay, this is on the radar still, right? It's not just a document or something that's been sent out now. We're going to revisit this. So it reminds me that this is something that's important.
Yes, exactly. That's a huge piece of it. So scheduling those things, also like scheduling, like, okay, we did the team meeting, but do we actually come back? Can we create a team tradition where after away matches, we always stop at this place and, you know, we just allowing the players to connect. Can we, you know, every Friday get the team together out here? Every Wednesday, can we spend 30 minutes before training, you know, on one issue of culture or, you know, teaching our kids something or having them do some sort of activity? You know, everyone's context is different, but we talk about team culture time is, or team culture days is just one ways to say, hey, here's 30 minutes, you know, once a week, or here's an hour once a month that we're just going to continue to come back as a team to reflect on things or to spend time investing in those relationships.
And JP, from your experience, or maybe from the people you've spoken to, is it harder to change a culture that's kind of already in place than maybe to start from scratch? I mean, I'm going to guess it probably is, but I don't know. You know, so I'm trying to think if coaches have kind of inherited maybe, or a part of a culture is already existing, is their journey going to be slightly tougher than maybe if they were starting from zero?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. You know, I love working with coaches that are hitting the reset button on the culture. I also work with coaches that are just starting out in a new program. The thing I like about reset, and the key to reset, is there such a powerful, powerful, powerful way to demonstrate a growth mindset with our players, which is, if you've been effective as a leader, you've got to own the culture, right? Because there's no bad teams, there's only bad leaders, as the guy Jocko Willink, the Navy SEAL, says, which I agree in a lot of times, in a lot of ways. So when we own the culture and we take responsibility for our part that we've played in the current state of the culture, and we're vulnerable and we demonstrate the willingness and the ability to change, there's nothing more powerful for your players than to see that. They say, well, coach used to just lay into us, you know, or the coach used to, you know, just complain all the time. And now you're out after practice and after games and you're taking ownership and you're making changes, you're more in control, you're actually caring more about them as a person, you're asking them, like, whoa, you know, but that transparency around that can be very, very powerful. So I don't think it's, and it can, honestly, it can ignite such an amazing experience for everyone. I've experienced it myself, and I've also walked with coaches that have done that. So not always is it harder.
No, that makes sense, I guess. I mean, in some ways, you know, if it's been particularly bad before, the more you can make it better, right? The more the magic can shine. So I guess I see the point. Now, the final one really around kind of topics and themes would be around kind of maybe how you, I want to use the word enforce, but maybe it's not the right word, I don't know, but how you kind of insist on the culture and how you sustain it over time, even through challenges, without, by definition, kind of almost undermining the culture, right? Because I'm, you know, if you're trying to create this kind of all-encompassing, you know, working together kind of philosophy and approach, if you get some resistance or some challenges as part of that, new player comes in potentially not quite aligned or something changes maybe externally, is there ways in which you can enforce the culture in a positive way?
Great question. And I like to say reinforce.
Okay.
You know, we talk about enforcing the culture, but it starts with reinforcing. It's about celebrating the behaviors. You know, if you say you value competitiveness and two players go at it and they have a hard tackle, a lot of times we want to come in there and protect, you know, individuals. And I get that. You got to create a safe, healthy environment, but you got to celebrate that moment of competitiveness. Even when guys get too chippy with each other and you can affirm them and say, God, I love that you guys want to compete and that you want to win. You know, I love that. But how can we redirect that in another way? So it's always trying to find ways to celebrate the good, even amongst bad, you know. There's a great example of this in the NBA finals a few years back. Monty Williams, who is the NBA coach of the year last year for the Phoenix Suns. And I've gotten to spend some time with the Suns. He has this amazing moment where one of their players in game two of this 7-game series is pouting because he's getting absolutely destroyed by Giannis from the Milwaukee Bucks. And he's pounding on the bench. And Monty gets down really close and looks him in the eyes and says, D.A., DeAndre is his name. He says, D.A., you're upset because you hold yourself to a high standard. You want to do well. Like, he initially acknowledges the fact of, hey, you're upset because you don't want to lose. You want to win. And he connects with that individual. Now that he's connected, now D.A. is more likely to hear the next thing he has to say. He says, we need you to do this. The team needs you to do this. We're counting on you, right? He gives that signals of connection. And that's it, right? He gives the Aaron's, this is what we need you to do, man. And what does he do? He goes out there and just stops Giannis, and they went winning game two of the finals. They end up losing the finals, but, you know, all the way through. But it was an amazing moment. It was captured on camera. And that I think about that is about celebrating even the good. Obviously, you know, celebrating the good when there's just good, right, too. It's like, well, hey, what went well today in practice? How can we celebrate each other and those things? But I think the real skill is when a coach can celebrate the good while even pointing out, like, hey, that's not okay how we do things here, you know?
And I guess what helps that is if you're really clear about what good looks like to you and your culture, so you can identify those little kind of nuggets of gold, even if they're in a pile of mess at that moment in time, to be able to pull it out and shine a light on that rather than the other noise on the outside. And the more clear you are as a coach, I guess, about, or as the culture's clear, I guess, not even the coach, but the culture's clear about what good looks like, you find that stuff, don't you? Even in those moments of madness, maybe when things aren't going quite right.
Absolutely. And what that the thing about that is, that's where language is really great. You know, if you study great cultures, they have cultural language. You know, one of the greatest sports teams of all time is the New Zealand All Blacks. They have these phrases, you know, belly not back, you know, keep a blue head, you know, but just like, you know, belly not back is essentially, you know, say it to my belly, don't say it behind my back, right? Just get to me straight. And you can, when you have language, you can quickly celebrate those behaviors. You can point to those behaviors. That's the power of language, right? Having the mantras in itself isn't culture, but you can use those as tools to celebrate those behaviors for sure.
I guess my final question around the topic of kind of team culture would be about measuring it really then, and how we might reflect as coaches and how we're doing or how the culture is doing. Is measuring the culture important, do you think, as part of the process? And if so, how would we do that?
Great, great question. And that's something that at my business TOC, we are working really hard in the next few years here to become better at measuring it. So much of it can be measured more qualitatively, you know, and so what we do, and we already do that, you know, with our coaches that we work with, we're having forms to parents, players, you know, parents, if it's a youth level team or high school level team, just on their experience, they're doing kind of 360 assessments of the culture. A lot of times those are qualitative feedbacks. And so we do try to do it in the qualitative way as much as possible. Finding more quantitative ways to measure the culture can be a little bit more difficult, right? So, you know, it's just because it's you know, behavioral based, but it really comes back to those success criteria early on. You know, when it comes to, so one way that we're going to measure with a college Division I lacrosse team this year is we're measuring culture from last year to this year. One of the ways the coach wants is they want this championship mindset. Well, what's a championship mindset? It's fighting for those 50-50 balls, you know, and they can document, they going through film of their 16 matches last year, they can say, well, this is how many 50-50 balls that we lost and we won. They can put a number on it, statistical number. Now, can we move the number up, the percentage? Another way, high school, very high level high school team in the States, top ranked one, they would assess culture by shot selection. You know, are we taking selfish shots or team shots, right? They have a little bit more complex, you know, terminology than selfish or team shots. But essentially, if they shoot 70 shots in a game, we can say of those 70 shots, these are 50 of them were the shots that we want to take. They're within our system of play. So can we move that number up, or are we going more selfish as the year goes on? So that's our new method, is to try to find some quantitative metrics. And that's what we're really excited to be measuring here in the next few years.
Awesome. Superb. Thank you, JP, so much for that. You're not going just yet, but we'll finish just around the bit around the book. So the book, it's The Culture System. It's available. People can find that. Can they? Where's the best place to get the book from?
Yeah, just head on to Amazon. It's on all the Amazons, the Co.UKs, the Australian ones. I mean, it's on all the O's there. It's on Audible, as well as I think the audiobook for iBooks as well too. So it's a lot of yeah. So it's an audiobook. It's also ebook and paperback. If you want to learn more about it too, you can just go to myculturesystem.com.
Perfect. We'll put the links in the show notes in so people can find it nice and easy. But thank you for that. Okay. A question we do ask all our guests is if there was one thing that you could change about the world of coaching, what would that be?
Oh, I'm going to give you two because there's
People
two
always do.
there's,
You heard that.
yeah, exactly. There's two that are so big in my heart. If I could change one thing, is that every coach could have a coach.
Love it.
Every coach could have a coach. Every coach, deserves a coach. If our players get coaches, why can't the coach have a coach? I think that whether that's the club director or, someone from the external, the outside, but just we need coaching. You talk about all these changes around like how to support it. Like, end of the day, man, like nothing is better than having a coach that helps you along that process. We don't have to own the whole process ourselves of getting better. The other thing is that coach education would have something that would be drastically overhauled to something that's way more practical and relevant. At the end of the day, I just feel like coaches need actual implementable things that they can do within their own coaching that, we don't need all, I mean, we don't need just a bunch of theory. We need to understand what it looks like. And it needs to be interesting and engaging so that coaches do want to show up for that coach education.
Do you think we spend enough time looking at different sports as coaches? I know I'm guilty very much of looking pretty much in the world of football and soccer and not often going further afield than that. Is that something that we can improve on?
I think we need to go outside of sports altogether.
Right.
I, th
Yeah.
I, yeah, I think, sports in some ways seem to lag behind others out there. You just look at the way that leadership is changing in the world, at these big companies like the Googles, you look at the way leadership is changing, in those type of companies that are successful. And the things that we see sports coaches do, they would never get away with in there. The way that we demean players and tear into them, nobody can do that in leadership, not even really in the military anymore. Somehow sports gets this pass because it's sports. That's the way we've always done it. So,
Yeah.
and we have all these rationales. It's just not acceptable. And I'm not advocating soft coaching at all. I'm all about high standards and enforcing those standards, actually, which we didn't talk too much about today. But I really do think we have to be tough. We have to be demanding. But I think we get a lot to learn from people outside of sports.
It's the way we do it, right? That's the most important bit. And or maybe the how we do it rather than what we do. It's how you go about it. And I think you're right with seeing some things in industry and politics. There seems to be a bit of a shift. Do you see things moving in a positive direction? There's obviously a lot more we can do, and you're part of that process. But do you see it? Is there been a more positive shift over maybe the last 5 years or so?
Depends on the sport and depends on the country, honestly, and the
Right.
region that it's in. I
Yeah.
think, I would love to say it's all positive and all love, but it's just not the case. In a lot of cases, some are still just really stagnant. And then in other ways, we're seeing other places where it's so institutions have become overly protective that coaches can't actually hold players to a standard, and that's it's almost become too much. It's
An
just like it's this
overcorrection.
massive. It's a most massive overcorrection, and that's the problem too. Absolutely, we need to be focused on the mental health of athletes and those type of things for sure. Mental health being a big one, but just completely having no standards in our program, not challenging athletes, that's not the solution. But that's oftentimes what some is, and organizations that are pushing and pushing towards is well, hey, you can't have those conversations and stuff like that. So that's a bit discouraging, but I do think there's a lot more. Maybe it's just because I'm around it. I have so many amazing coaches I get to work with and listeners to our podcast and readers of the book that are engaging with it and love it. And so for that alone, I do feel like there is a lot of people that want to do things better and do it the right way. So yeah, very encouraging in that sense.
Awesome. And what about you then, JP? What's your plans moving forward? The podcast, the blogs, the books, all going to carry on?
Yeah, man, we're plugging away, and next year we got an online course that we're launching for coaches to kind of teach them some of these tools and methods that we talk about in the book.
Awesome. Well, I know how busy you are. Well done for all the great work. The book's fantastic. I know there's lots of things that you've got going on through different media channels that you've got. I'd encourage people to reach out, have a look, and dip into some of that stuff. If people want to find out more about you and the work you do, JP, what's the best way of going about that?
Yeah, tocculture.com. And you can just email me at jpnerbun, N-E-R-B-U-N, at tocculture.com. I'm not on Twitter every day. It's more like a few times a week type of thing. So it's best just to email me or check out the website.
Top, man. JP, thank you so much for that. I really love the conversation. It's been brilliant. I've done nearly 100 of these now, and that's one of my favorite ones is today's one. I think the coach thing is something that resonates with me. I think when you get a certain part of your career in coaching, if I can call it a career, you kind of move on from the X's and O's, don't you? And like you say, researching, going online, trying to find the latest drill, and you think more of the holistic stuff, and culture is a massive part of that. And the work you've done and the stuff that you've done certainly helped me get my head around a few things. So thank you so much. Really appreciate that. Keep us posted how things are going. Is that all right?
Yeah, sounds great.
Top, man. All right. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable, and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.